placed on hold, might believe such a statement.
That is very nice of you to say, Slumbok replied, but we must now destroy your building and murder your leader.
Rude, scoffed Andrea, just rude. The best friend squad broke up into groups of two, and each group formed a tight hug. The first group of embracers ran straight into the wall with such force that the entire building shook. After they moved aside, another duo repeated the action. Everyone seemed to really enjoy their time with their best friends. Beside Andrea, Teresa furiously barked out orders to the soups. When she ran out of directions, she grabbed Andrea's shoulder.
I got Fuego, Kitchen Sink, King Tiger, and a few others on a dropship down to Times Square to get the subway coming up. If that's still functional, we got a shot.
All of the Cup employees who had been evacuated left by train, and these two groups would likely bump into each other.
Oh, funny running into you here,
they would say, as the best friend squad pounded Andrea into paste.
I got too many hammers and Gold Rusher trying to dig below the force field and make a tunnel up into the building, Teresa continued. So, we might die, but at least we won't die because of lack of teamwork and coordination.
We'll be remembered for being proactive and synergistic, Andrea suggested.
Yes, they can put that on our tombstones.
Teresa returned to yelling at people over her headset. Andrea looked on screen to see Gold Rusher with his raggedy gray beard, dressed like a 19th century prospector, blast his pickaxe into the ground with devastating force.
Remember the plan!
Andrea shouted to the last line of Cup defenders as the best friend squad picked up their partners and rammed them head first into the building.
The plan is that we try to kill them before they kill us, said Essen Ahmed.
Andrea gave two quick claps.
Yes, remember that plan. Also, if anyone else has a better plan, please let me know.
No one did.
Now, if that plan starts to fail, we go to Plan Andrea. Plandria! Everyone remember Plandria!
On screen, they all watched as the best friend squad penetrated the outer wall. A slab of 3-foot-thick concrete broke free from a hug attack, and two more rams cleared enough space for the best friend squad to stroll into Cup HQ. Before entering, the entire force hugged each other in congratulations, making it clear that no force in existence could compromise the affection they had for each other. It actually was a little intimidating to Andrea, so perhaps Slumbok had a point.
Wait, isn't Plandria just surrendering?
Gilby Gilroy asked.
Sort of, yes, but in a very clever way. Andrea replied.
The best friend squad skipped hand in hand into the cavernous space occupied by research and development that took up the first two floors. Essen Ahmed and Gilby had set all of the alarm systems to attack as soon as they entered, but the best friend squad had no problem dispatching the auto turrets. The electrified floors proved a mild irritation before they jetpacked up through the ceiling and into the third floor, where they hugged again, fixed each other's hair, and spoke very earnestly to one another, no doubt affirming how important each member was to their partner, with lots of assurances of never taking their best friend for granted.
Best friend squad! They shouted.
They're right below us, shouted Gilby. Right below us!
The war room was on the fourth floor, on the opposite side of the building from Ms. O's office, and it seemed any hope for rescue disappeared when Teresa stopped calling out orders over her mic, tossed her headset to the ground, and grabbed a shotgun.
Andrea, are you ready?
Dr. Srinivasan prompted.
Right!
He had brought in the original kitchen sink suit, her old friend. It lay across the floor, wide open. Maybe not wide, since it had not gotten any more spacious since her last encounter. She lay herself on top and hoped for the best. It shut closed around her and spoke,
"Kitchen sink, we'll fight!"
Andrea, it's good to have you inside me again.
Good to be back inside you. Didn't realize you were sentient, but let's do this.
By the way, there's no ammo, Dr. Srinivasan informed her as she awkwardly rose to her feet. We sent all of that with Cosmina, so good luck.
Foolhardy, Andrea rushed into the hallway, and the rest of the team scrambled behind her to hide in various operations offices. Alone, she faced straight at the door to the north stairway, hearing each step pound until the door burst open and Slumbok emerged, with Inspector Well actually still strapped to his chest and a flaming sword in his hand, like a super weird modern father taking his child to work.
"Out of my way, resident of Piggle's planet!" he commanded. "I am Slumbok, admiral of the Sparnaxian Space Fleet. I have come from Ms. O, and I will slay all who stand in my way."
"I am Andrea Vernon!" Kitchen Sink shot back. "I am the administrative assistant to Miss Persephone O. She has asked not to be disturbed, and I will not be moved until such time as her orders change."
The best friend squad surrounded Slumbok, and the mass charged straight at Andrea. Halfway there, shotguns poked out from three separate offices as Teresa, Gilby, and Ahmed fired on the invaders. No one was hurt, but all of the best friend squad paused to make sure their partners were okay. Then, one of their heads came off.
"Spectacular Crab is having you for dinner!"
Krabby announced as he snapped off the noggin of a best friend standing in the back of the pack with his pincers. He then stabbed it off the ground and threw it in his mouth. The decapitated best friend rushed forward and received a pincher straight to the brain. Andrea hoped for chaos, but the best friend squad loved and trusted each other too much. She swung wildly with robot arms, but a best friend snuck in low and launched his partner straight at her right leg, knocking her down. The pair elevated into the air, attempting to slam their heads into her midsection, but Head Start sprinted over to her and in a millisecond had crossed the hall and grabbed the duo's legs. They landed face first, and Head Start tried to elbow them both in the head with what looked like an awful pro-wrestling move that did no damage. He was new, after all. Krabby missed a stab at one of their heads, bouncing harmlessly off armor. The best friend reacted by picking up his partner by the legs and swinging at Krabby, landing with an uppercut that sent the old soup into the wall several feet back. Not ready to capitulate, Krabby leapt back up with pincers aimed and ready. Dr. Srinivasan fell from the drop ceiling and took a shot at point-blank range at Slumbok, which bruised his face and knocked him off balance for a brief moment before he cut off Dr. Srinivasan's left arm with a chop of his flaming sword. Dr. Srinivasan collapsed instantly. A best friend pair tackled Head Start from behind. Down the hall, two best friends embraced and launched themselves like a hug torpedo at Krabby's front right leg, knocking him off balance and onto the ground. Andrea looked over to see two best friends grab Teresa and squeeze her between them in an attempt to hug her to death. Scanning the room, she saw the exact same tactic being used against Gilby Gilroy and Essen Ahmed.
Plandria!
Kitchen Sink screamed.
Plandria! We surrender! Plandria!
The fighting ceased for a moment as everyone watched the suit open and Andrea pull herself awkwardly out.
How did you fit in there? Slumbok asked with amazement. It does not look like it's built for a being of your size.
We surrender. So you can just chill with the comments, said Andrea. I'm very comfortable with myself.
They surrendered!
Cheered two best friends in unison. All of the Cup employees were herded into the center of the hallway, including Dr. Srinivasan, who was dragged by Head Start and Essen. His wound had already cauterized from the flaming sword, and so there was no blood.
Just Dr. Srinivasan missing an arm.
Perhaps later we will have a celebration party, a best friend called out. We can spend time together and talk about our feelings. And our hopes and dreams, cheered another.
Andrea, standing defeated before Slumbok, said,
Ms. O will see you now.
This is a trick, isn't it? If this is one of your pickle planet tricks, I will pound you into paper used for making facsimiles of previously existing documents,
Slumbok threatened. Just ask Inspector Well, actually. Go ahead and ask him if this is a trick. She was taking a chance, hoping that Slumbok would ask a question rather than give a statement that Inspector Well actually could correct.
Flimsy, annoying man. Is this a trick?
Boom.
Inspector Well actually gave a wink, realizing Andrea's move, and answered,
Well, actually, no. It's not a trick. You can tell by her pulse, which most of you probably can't observe, as well as her eye movements, which are...
Enough! Bring me to Ms. O, he said, as he flung Inspector Well actually to the ground.
Andrea turned and walked back down the hall. Slumbok followed, leaving the best friend squad to watch over the vanquished cup defenders. Steps away from her own desk, Andrea turned into the operations break room.
I am no fool, declared Slumbok. Your Ms. O is not here.
It's time for her afternoon espresso. I am already going to be fired for interrupting her against her wishes, so I am making her espresso to avoid being double-fired.
How can one be double-fired? Pickle's Planet is a strange and horrible place.
Oh, hey there,
said Scott, stirring, taking a sip of water out of a translucent plastic cup.
Nice to meet you. I'm Scott. I like that sword.
Thank you, said Slumbok. I earned its guardianship after the victory of Sparnax at Dvaup.
Cool. Super cool.
Scott took another sip.
You know, I have not had the pleasure of visiting Sparnax yet. When I get there, what are the best things to see? More importantly, where should I eat?
Andrea ignored Scott, the last distraction left between here and Ms. O, and focused all of her stress into making a great espresso, timing being the key. She spent 2 months working in a cafe in Florence and took great pride in her espresso-making ability. Life had knocked Andrea down a lot of pegs. She had seen herself as brilliant and bound for something world-changing as an arrogant teenager and college student. Years later, she thought of herself as depressingly average, not even underachieving. Just who she was. She was never going to be a disease-curing doctor or a crusading politician, but she was also someone who made a mean espresso. Timing was key when it came to espresso, and she had perfect timing.
Well, I don't currently need any kind of superhero protection, Slumbok informed Scott, but if I do, I'm sure I will keep your card.
He placed Scott's business card in a fold in his armor.
That's great.
I have to go kill your boss now.
Wild, said Scott. Just wild.
Espresso made, Andrea exited and proceeded to her desk, where she sat down and surreptitiously clicked on the video monitor icon on her computer screen before she pressed on the intercom button and said, Ms. O... There's a Mr. Tupac here to see you.
You know my name. It's Slumbok. Slumbok!
Back over the intercom, Ms. O's annoyed voice answered, Andrea, I'm in here with the executive team, and we're busier than a pig on crap day. I told you I was too busy to see anyone. Very sorry, Ms. O.
Don't let it happen again.
I also have your espresso.
Andrea, you're trying me right now.
She understood that her boss did not want to see a man with a flaming sword sent to kill her, But it still wounded her to hear Ms. O take that harsh tone. She moved her mouse to select the video feed of the fourth floor hallway, which displayed the sad image of her colleagues held captive. Andrea turned back to Slumbok and rolled her eyes.
Oof! Bosses! I believe you said you could do lunch next Thursday?
Slumbok held his sword ready for battle, pointed at Ms. O's office door. It shot a flame out, burning the handle.
Persephone O, do you hear me? I am going to cut your assistant's head off. Come running, Persephone O. I am going to take you and parade you in a carriage through Sparnax's capital. What will your planet say then, Persephone O? And when I return, all of your cities will burn.
As Slumbok yelled, Andrea looked back at the monitor in time to witness King Tiger burst through the stairway door and rip off the heads of two best friends, one with each claw. Kitchen Sink followed right behind, firing saw blades that took out another one.
All your cities will burn, destroying all the...
Slumbok stopped cold as he heard the sounds from down the hall.
Space farts! If I go down, I'm taking your leader with me.
No, said Andrea, as Slumbok took a step by the door. She gently placed her hand on his sword hand, feeling the flames burn her. You're not going in there. You're going to Roosevelt Island.
Now, Teleporter Joe!
I'm trying, said Teleporter Joe, crouched under her desk holding onto her ankle.
What in the great star's name?
Exclaimed Slumbok.
Think about boobs, Teleporter Joe!
Andrea insisted. And then, they were no longer at Cup headquarters. Instead, they found themselves on the northern tip of Roosevelt Island, standing directly in front of the lighthouse. They were in their exact same positions, Teleporter Joe lying on the ground, Andrea off balance, about to fall backward without a chair to support her, and Slumbok standing with his sword raised, but not so high as to hit the ceiling that had existed above him a second earlier. Slumbok had only a final moment of confusion before.
I am the big axe!
The axe cut through Slumbok's neck, across and down. His head only detached halfway, still clinging lamely to his body. The dead body of Earth's nemesis collapsed in front of Andrea, and his sword extinguished.
I would seriously make out with you right now, except that Teleporter Joe is here, Andrea said.
I understand that, the big axe replied. I did just save your life.
I mean, you stood in the exact spot I told you to, and followed my plandria. If that's what you mean by saved my life.
I think we should be boyfriend-girlfriend.
It's shameful that you, one of the great superheroes in the entire region, are really going to exploit this moment to get what you want.
I am the Big X, and I want to be boyfriend-girlfriend.
You can't just say I'm the Big X and think you win every fight.
This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to declare us boyfriend-girlfriend right now. You are free to break up with me. Go ahead, break up with me.
Fine, said Andrea. I'll make a deal with you. We'll be exclusive. But every now and then, I get to break the axe and then hook up with Little the Big Axe, so it'll be like I'm dating two people instead of one.
You really want Tiny Me? I was puny.
Hot, but in a different way. Also, I want to be the taller one every now and then. Hey, that was a cool trick you pulled, shoving the axe back together.
I didn't know if that would work, but there were a bunch of aliens trying to kill me, so I figured, what the hey? Anyway, they didn't kill me.
Cuppy ran up and leaped on Andrea so powerfully he knocked her to the ground.
Hey, Cuppy!
You're calling it Cuppy now?
Yes, that is his name. We should get walking. We have to go over the bridge to walk into Queens, unless you have your Metro card.
Of course I have my Metro card. I have my wallet and my keys and my phone.
You were just in a battle to the death with alien imperialists, the Big Axe. You don't even have a case for your phone.
My overalls have big, soft pockets.
The couple began their hike, with Cuppy running circles around them. When she realized they were holding hands, her immediate instinct was to wrench her hand away and not be someone who did that. But it felt right enough for her to let it slide this once.
Guys! Teleporter Joe called out. I also saved the day. Also, if you two want to make out, I can look away.
They ignored him and headed down toward the subway station.
Hey, what happened with you and the ex?
The Big Axe inquired. Turned out my brother sent him to convince me to quit my evil ways.
Ah, so that's why nothing happened. What would you have done if he had made a move on you?
Andrea gave this question some serious thought before answering. I would have taken him back to my place to show how independent I was and how much I wasn't into you. But as soon as we started making out, I would have felt guilty and started to think about how much I really do like you, and I would have kicked him out, and then I would have gone over to your place.
You like me.
Don't push it, the Big X. The last remaining spider ship sailed high above them, rising into the air and away from their planet.
Oh, Andrea said. Also, we have to find a bathroom, because I have teleporter's diarrhea.
Chapter 30. Ms. Persephone O., Vice President of Sales and Operations. Cup had defeated the greatest existential threat that Earth had ever faced, and so all of the employees got cheesecake. Ms. O had indeed hired a caterer with a build-your-own cheesecake station with options for chocolate chips, strawberry syrup, peanut butter sauce, candied almonds, and many other tantalizing possibilities. The cheesecake sommelier greeted the Big Axe and Andrea as they entered through a hole in the exterior wall.
Security seems a little lax, the Big Axe opined. Oui, monsieur, said the cheesecake artist with no attempt at a French accent. This was the best place to set up, and Ms. O said it was unlikely anyone would attempt to break in. Cheesecake?
Yeah, all right.
Before he could be served, Cosmina and Signora Fuego, dressed in a Louis Vuitton tracksuit, ran in and gave emphatic hugs.
We have won the day, Cosmina averred.
There's good liquor, too, Signora Fuego added.
Andrea ordered the Big Axe's cheesecake, 3 slices, and her own, as the soups caught up on their respective adventures. During their walk over, Andrea had attempted to recount all the other conflicts of the day, but somehow they got in an argument about the best Michael Jackson song, which took up the rest of their trip. As they ventured further into the R&D lab, they found the other superheroes and Cup employees having a low-key celebration. King Tiger, Permafrost, and Lightning Wong joined in with the Big Axe for more hugs. Only briefly did Andrea wonder if they had borrowed the idea from the Best Friend Squad before she remembered seeing King Tiger and Cosmina decapitate those lovable murderers.
Did you hear about Rabbi Diamond? King Tiger asked. Gone.
No!
Yelled the Big Axe.
Not dead, Signora Fuego cut in. He crashed the 2 ships into each other and leapt out at the last second. Then he went and took the 3rd spider ship and flew off. The Rebbe left me. Who's going to be our 4th when we play hearts now?
Cosmina and Lightning Wong nodded.
Where did he go?
Asked the Big Axe. Andrea enjoyed having someone with her who could ask questions. Also, she was not entirely sure the soups realized she was there. Signora Fuego duck-faced.
The Rebbe said he had to go back to Spawn X to stop them from blah, 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 universal domination and oppression, blah, blah, blah. I told him not to go. He's crazy to think he can take down an entire planet by himself.
What did he say to that?
The Big Axe asked.
He said, I worry like his Jewish Earth mother.
The Supes gave a hearty laugh, and someone handed a beer to the Big Axe, who drank it down with a mighty gulp and belched out,
I am the Big Axe!
Her boyfriend. King Tiger surprised Andrea as he walked up and put his arm around her.
You did very well, Andrea Vernon. We've been watching highlights up on the screen.
King Tiger pointed to a far wall where a projector now showed video of Noblesse Oblige, dressed in his early 1900s suit with cane and monocle, throwing burning coins at a jerk.
That was magnificent stalling you did.
And you made good use of the suit that used to be kitchen sink,
Cosmina offered.
It is dead to me. If you had given up any sooner, we would have lost Miss O and the office,
Senora Fuego said, with rare seriousness.
I will give you 5% discount at Wong's Hardware in Flushing, Queens,
Lightning Wong offered. This was touching in a way, but he had already offered this to almost everyone else in the office.
You called Mama, and I hate you, Permafrost said. I don't want to say thank you. But everyone is saying thank you, and they look at Permafrost, and I only say that. Thank you. You know, King Tiger said, were you at all physically extraordinary, you would make an excellent superhero.
Senora Fuego broke out laughing and barely got out.
I don't know. The Big Axe, would you describe her as physically extraordinary?
Hey, yelled the Big Axe. That's my girlfriend.
Andrea was embarrassed, but at the same time hopeful that they would now have a frank conversation about the manner in which they all made love without murdering their partners with lightning, heat, or tiger claws. Unfortunately, King Tiger changed the subject, saying,
Congratulations on getting the William,
to the Big Axe.
Nah, said Senora Fuego. Pickles was the William, and the Rebbe got him.
They all argued and drank and ate their cheesecake and argued and drank. What Andrea had most enjoyed about not being allowed to ask questions was the ability to find the answers on her own, even those questions which seemed theoretical, such as, do I really belong here? And what is the difference between a superhero and a supervillain? In a complex world full of conflict, would it not be impossible to have only two distinct categories for these elevated beings? The answer she discovered was that it was very easy. Both superheroes and supervillains possessed something that gave them abilities to create and destroy in a manner normal Homo sapiens could not approach. They both could accomplish amazing feats. Superheroes had licenses and certifications, supervillains did not. Many supervillains had argued that their actions were meant to liberate the masses from their unseen shackles, save the planet by cleansing it of humans, provide entertainment in a dark time, or remove an incompetent mayor. The most common refrain was that the supervillain was fighting an unjust system, and that anyone who opposed them was part of that system and thus the real villain. Pretty much every recorded supervillain diatribe contained the words, the real villain. But they did not have licenses and certifications, so they were the villains. It was an answer that lacked nuance, which felt wrong to Andrea, but it was an answer for someone who had a job to do. And that was the thing about superheroes. They did their job. Supervillains lacked the day-to-day focus needed to accomplish great things. Maybe one day they felt like committing a bank robbery, the next like planting brain worms in the ears of the Supreme Court justices, and the next setting up a lawless kingdom in North Dakota. This lack of consistency was yet another aid to Andrea and Cup. Supervillains had never even successfully organized in any kind of meaningful way. Psychopaths and egotists did not work well together in groups. There was not even an agreement on names, and thus there were 45 active villains named the Destroyer. Every time a report came in about the Destroyer, Andrea had to figure out if it was the one who was a tornado, the hacker, the lady who shot lightning, the guy with the dog and the weird hat, etc. In the early 1990s, it had been even worse when hundreds of supervillains had incorporated NOT into their names. There was the good guy, NOT, easily killed, NOT, the pacifist, NOT, and too many more. The closest thing to a community of supervillains had come a few years earlier when Nevermore, the half-woman, half-raven who could psychically perceive a person's greatest regrets and longings, started Global Organization for Destruction with the less-than-subtle acronym GOD. A few dozen others joined her, and they successfully destroyed two city parks and a canal before someone suggested they elect positions such as president and treasurer. All of their members died during the election. Except Nevermore, who tried again with the real heroes. Andrea eye-rolled just thinking about the name. This time she attempted to govern by consensus. A heated disagreement led the group to the consensus that they should all murder each other, and a bloodbath ensued. Again, Nevermore alone survived the carnage, leading some to consider her to be the world's worst villain and others to see her as a brilliant vigilante. In no way, however, could she be considered a superhero. Superheroes fought evil and possessed licenses and certifications. Supervillains caused chaos and did not possess licenses and certifications. Slumbok and Pickles had not possessed licenses and certifications, and thus their attempt to conquer Earth was an act of supervillainy. Easy. Andrea was not a superhero, and she had no plans to become one. She did not belong inside Kitchen Sink, but she did belong at Cup. She could not say that the world would have been destroyed if she had not worked at Cup. She could say that the world was not destroyed, and she did work at Cup, and that was enough for today. Yet another question seemed a little trickier. When was a battle won? At one point, did John Sobieski look out over a field of retreating Ottomans and know that the day was his? What was the final arrow let loose from an archer's bow that gave Agincourt to Henry V? What was the point where everyone realized it was dumb to feud over West Coast versus East Coast rap? Andrea pondered this last question, but only briefly, as Ms. O had already revealed the answer for this specific occasion. The Battle of the Bronx would be a victory for Cup when she had a check in her hand. The person authorized to write that check, Irene Clementi, sat in Ms. O's office sipping her coffee.
Delicious, Irene said.
My administrative assistant is a master of coffee and alien murder, Ms. O responded, nodding to Andrea, who sat across the desk beside Irene, taking notes on her tablet.
I like this office, Irene added. Simple, elegant, not covered in debris and green alien blood like the rest of the building.
Andrea noticed the one exception to the minimalist beauty of Ms. O's office. She had framed and mounted the caricature of her and Andrea riding a tandem bike in front of the Statue of Liberty.
I hope you understand my embarrassment at the state of our headquarters at the moment. One's office is one's body, and I ate a bunch of dead aliens this afternoon, if you catch my meaning.
Andrea looked out Ms. O's window. Now just a boring, normal window. The old west-facing view into New Jersey had been replaced, and she looked out across East Harlem toward Queens. Individual fireworks shot off rooftops at random intervals. a few final explosions before the day ended. She knew the biggest celebrations were happening in the Bronx, where a fleet of government construction vehicles had already begun the process of cleaning up the remnants of the alien incursion. People gathered as close as they could to the stadium to cheer the defeat of the most powerful invading force to ever challenge Earth. Ms. O handed over the printout to Irene, who scanned it half-heartedly.
"These numbers are in line with ours," Irene said. "No loss of civilian life. Property damage will be covered by insurance. All environmental indicators show no evidence of long-term hazard, and the bad guys stayed between your lines. You did good, Mama."
Ms. O gave her first smile of the day. "We pride ourselves on our efficiency and our customer service here at CUP."
"No way to ask this delicately. Did you lose any of your own?"
Ms. O's smile extinguished. "Rabbi Diamond. Not dead. He's the one who took the third spider ship and flew off. Others injured," Ms. O continued. "Rhino woman took some nasty bites from obstreperous swarm. Sequoia's fighting days are likely done. Also, my lead R&D scientist, Dr. Srinivasan, lost an arm to a flaming sword here in the building."
"Yikes," Irene offered.
"Thanks, Irene. The good news is that Dr. Srinivasan is recovering well and is excited about the possibilities for his new arm. I've received 10 emails since he went to the hospital asking for approval for 10 different designs." CUP's superheroes had faced their toughest day and survived. Below them in R&D, they continued to drink and demand that marketing play the footage of the fight again. No doubt they were all still arguing about which alien was the William. The office employees cheered to their profit sharing and the possibilities to come. People danced and sang along to "We're Not Gonna Take It" by Twisted Sister, with the word "Sparnax" shouted in occasionally. Now it was time to ring the bell and call the battle over. Irene opened her purse and removed a check from the Bronx County Defense Allocation Fund Oversight Committee for a completely stupid amount of money. The occasion seemed to call for an oversized sweepstakes-winning check, but that would be a little ostentatious for a day which had seen so much destruction and terror. Also, Andrea's Yankees were going to have to play in the Mets stadium for at least the rest of the season, and that just seemed wrong. Her siblings, all Mets fans, would ride her for this for months.
"What happened to the aliens?"
Irene asked, holding the check in her hand.
"The ones who defected."
Ms. O controlled her grin. "The army of jerks. Those who surrendered are being held by the government." Ms. O did not mention that she was petitioning to have them released into CUP's custody, for reasons Andrea could only guess. Irene set the check down on the table.
"You did good, Mama. We look forward to a long relationship with CUP.
And we look forward to a bright and safe future in the Bronx," Ms. O replied. "We're having a modest celebration here tonight, if you would like to join us."
"All right, but let all those beefy superheroes know that this 78-year-old gets real handsy when she drinks."
Irene smiled, nodded, and exited to join the revelry, leaving Ms. O and Andrea alone for the first time all day. Her boss smiled as she reached into her desk and pulled out a stack of papers, which she slid over to Andrea. The title page read, "Andrea Vernon, 90-Day Review." "As you know, you have been on your initial 90-day probationary period, which ends today. So, let's discuss your review." "Feeling pretty good about it, Ms. O."
"Confident. Let's hope it pays off for you. Now, you'll note that I rate employees on a scale of 1 to 100.
Previously, they used to rate employees 1 to 3 on every measure, but that's like having a hunting dog that can catch 3 squirrels. I need precision in my reviews. Andrea read aloud. Organization 92. Andrea keeps a clean work area, keeps schedules updated, and uses CupNet in an efficient and effective manner. You know, some people look at their reviews and say, it doesn't say anything bad. Why isn't it a perfect score? I'm glad you're not asking where your 8 points are, Ms. O said with a smile. Professionalism, Andrea read. 75. Andrea dresses appropriately, is courteous and professional, refers to coworkers as dude, which is inappropriate. That's on me for not mentioning it earlier, Ms. O conceded. I hate for there to be surprises in a review, but I have been so busy saving the world I've let the details slip out of my hand. Job knowledge, 90. Andrea still has much to learn, but has picked up CUP's procedure and its culture very quickly. She calls her coworkers dude. This is inappropriate. Did I say that twice? Crud. Again, you understand that your review suffered from some recent distractions. Andrea skimmed through to the end where she received an overall rating of 89. My parents will still put this up on the fridge if I give it to them. But so close to an A. Damn it, that reminds me. Hand me back that thing. Andrea set the review in front of Ms. O, who took out her pen and scribbled down a few notes. I typed this last night, and this is day 90, so anything you do today counts toward your review. Now, obviously, I'm going to have to ask you to retype this, which can wait until tomorrow. On the final page, Ms. O had scratched out the old score and given her a 91. The notes in the margin read, Andrea has perfect attendance and punctuality for every day of her employment thus far. She also helped save the world and the life of her boss. Nice work today, Ms. O said. This is a tough job. But ain't every job tough? Nothing bothers me more than people who yammer about how hard they work when they're spending all day reading emails and talking on the phone. My granddaddy went to war and risked his life and killed one of Mussolini's clones. Heck, I lost my thought. I'm more off track than a greyhound race next to a rabbit farm. You know, before I did this, I sold timeshares. And then I worked for a furniture retailer. Your brother ever gets his way and the government nationalizes the superheroes, I'll run a company that sells energy drinks or blenders or whatever. And you know what'll happen? I'll make the best damn blenders and murder all of my competition. I'm rambling. No, Andrea said, I'm with you. Course you are. I have to get to this party before it gets too rowdy. Yes, Miss O. To conclude your review, Andrea Vernon, let me say that there is a lot of work to do in the future, and I look forward to seeing you grow. Unfortunately, it will not be here. Andrea did a bit of a double take. She could not ask if she was fired. Well, not for a while, at least, Andrea. You see, the executive team and I were talking about expansion today. Well, first we were talking about whether or not we'd have to destroy the office and its valuable contents, yourself included. Thank you, said Andrea, wondering how much she had played into the argument against blowing up the building. And then, once you jumped that slumbok to head chopped off island, we talked about expansion. With our success today, we have new opportunities around the country and outside the country. CUP is expanding to Europe, and you and I need to travel over there and get to work on setting up the offices. You think you can handle that? I speak excellent Italian and Spanish, above average French, enough to find the library German, surprisingly competent Latvian, and passable Czech. Course you do. Epilogue.
Oh, Andrea, we are so very proud of you, her mother said.
Please repeat that, Andrea said.
I'm not sure State Senator Vernon heard you.
The day after the Battle of the Bronx, Andrea realized she was silly to avoid her family. She loved her family, and she needed to gloat in close proximity to her eldest brother.
So proud, her mother continued. We had so many relatives contact us to say they saw you on television. Even down in Haiti, Jean-Marie called and said everyone is proud of you. So proud. Proud.
We are very proud,
her father reiterated. Ms. O had held a press conference late the night before to assure the world that evil had been defeated and justice restored. Andrea stood beside her and nodded solemnly at appropriate times. Her mother took a moment to bask, looking at her accomplished daughter.
We made the patties you like to celebrate your company saving the whole world.
Delicious, Andrea exclaimed.
State Senator Vernon chewed contemptuously, unable to find words to express his distaste for Andrea's work without offending his parents. Instead, he just sat there and ate his tasty patty.
Congratulations, Administrative Assistant Vernon, he finally said.
Oh, thank you very much, State Senator Vernon.
Your company certainly demonstrated that there is no force that it cannot defeat. We can all sleep safer knowing that your company and its mysterious owners will defeat all who oppose them.
Wasn't she so beautiful at the press conference?
Her mother asked, not rhetorically in any way.
Yes, said Professor Vernon Blanchard. Administrative Assistant Vernon looked very nice, very professional. You really did us proud.
Our little Administrative Assistant Vernon saved the world,
Dr. Vernon said, with only a hint of sarcasm.
Thank you, but I only played a small part in saving the world.
Not to change the subject, but you have not told us how you know your gentleman friend. I'm not sure you actually told his name,
State Senator Vernon noted as he pointed at the big axe. Andrea had prepared for this moment and decided that she was ready to take the embarrassing woots from her siblings because the big axe was a great guy, and maybe this whole commitment thing was not as bad as she had thought, although she still had moments of panic when she felt herself trapped on a one-way track to marriage, children, moving to Long Island, station wagons, PTA meetings, arguments about expenses, and mom jeans. But she needed to calm down because she could still break free at any moment. Although she had a nightmare that the big axe got her pregnant, and when the doctor showed her the sonogram, they saw a tiny fetus holding a tiny axe. And she was still not talking, and everyone was looking at her. The big axe gulped down a beef patty and wiped at his mouth.
I am the big axe. I swing down my mighty arm and chop down evil. And I'm Andrea's boyfriend.
Her three siblings gasped dramatically and pretended to faint. Perhaps overdoing it a bit, Professor Vernon Blanchard began to fan herself.
A man for Andrea! Good, declared her mother. We need more babies in this family.
This gave the siblings cause to break out in applause. State Senator Vernon, having choked down all the negativity he wanted to spew about Cup to her, seemed to take special delight in her discomfort. Not wanting the moment to die, he stood, walked over to the big axe, gave him a solid hug, and said,
"Welcome to the family, the big axe. Happy to be here. A good man, and a good appetite,"
her father said, giving his strongest endorsements of anyone she had ever dated. Possibly the only endorsements.
Will you be joining Andrea in Europe?
Her mother asked. Andrea and the big axe both stopped chewing at that exact moment. The big axe resumed, swallowed, and asked,
You're going to Europe?
This has been an Audible original publishing production of Andrea Vernon and the Corporation for Ultra Human Protection. Written by Alexander C. Kane, performed by Bonnie Turpin. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzuk. Producer Bruce Kitovich. Copyright 2017 by Alexander C. Kane. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.